Welcome to part two of our interview with Paul Leary, co-owner of Blackbird Vineyards. A lot of what you're doing is out there on the road. You're meeting people, you're talking, and again, you'd already said it, you get confused. That just every year when you go out, is it kind of like, gosh, what am I going to do different? How am I going to go about this? How am I going to get people's attention?
Right. And you have to. You have to get on the market, A, to understand the market and its potential. You have to make sure your partners, meaning your distribution partners, understand what the heck you're doing. You hope you can get good reaction from the people you're, you know, putting the wine in front of. But you have to be really, diligent about being in market. If you just go to the market and you meet some people and you have a good time and you walk away from it, you're not going to see the results. You've got to follow up with them. You've got to put it in your database. You've got to be able to bring them closer to you. You know, we send, one of our biggest things in our company is trying to send as many personalized, handwritten thank you notes as we can. Even in this age of technology, right? I'm actually developing a report this next week that'll be sent automatically to all of our employees to which this is applicable that'll show how many thank you notes each individual has sent out in the last month. Because it'll be tracked by a field that they'll hit. And, you know, that's something that you want. We want those notes sitting on people's desks, meaning that paper, so that it's part of the company culture. Have it in your bag or your backpack. Those are the relationships that you want to create. Because the whole thing is, so I go to market, and we have a great event somewhere. Guess what? The next day, someone else did, too. Right? And so it's not like I'm AT&T, and the only one coming after me is Verizon. Right? There are tons of different wineries that are trying to get share of the distributor's mind, of the client's mind. And once again, the beauty and the pain of wine is that there is such an amazing amount of wines that you can drink in this world. That's the beauty. And the pain is there's such an amazing amount of wines you drink in this world. So what does that mean? Loyalty is low. Overall, loyalty is low. There are exceptions to the rule. Don't get me wrong. People get stuck on Chardonnay and they get stuck on a producer because it's comfortable. And that's okay. I'm all for it. But overall, wine is about a journey. They want to be transported to Italy that night. Then they want to go to, you know, Germany the other night. Then they want to go to California the next. So it's you've got to strive to get what I call share of mind, or even better, share of wallet.
Share of wallet.
Excellent. You just gave me a quote for the next intro when I set it up, by the way. Thank you. Wine is a journey, the whole Italy thing. Thank you. That was good.
No charge.
Right. Blackbird Vineyards, how many cases are you doing?
So Blackbird is, with the 2012 harvest, which is coming up, will be our 10th vintage, and we will do about 9,000 cases.
That's so, more than I thought. Wow.
You actually have to sell it, but we're relatively small. As you know, about 95% of Napa wineries are family wineries. We're not a family winery, but there's two of us that are, you know, partners in the business. And like I say, we started in 2003. We sell a majority of our wine, you know, direct to our clients. And then we sell the remainder to wholesale partners throughout the United States.
And who is your partner?
Michael Polensky is my business partner. He's the founder, and he was previously in financial services for most of his career and got out of it when he had bought a small vineyard, the Blackbird Vineyard in the Napa Valley. It's a 10-acre estate, and there was a home on it that he used as a residence. His primary was in San Francisco. And the reason why that he really made a life change and in 2005, 2006, started to put more of his full attention on the wine business and then a couple other things that are out there that we do, is because he would have clients coming into his office and more interested in the wine portfolio than their financial portfolio. Think about that for a moment. And it actually goes back to what I was saying, you know, a few minutes ago. Wine is a very emotional product. People want to talk about it. And when he kept hearing these comments, he knew that, wait a sec, you know, maybe I need to be doing something else. So everything that we do, though, let's make something really clear. Everything we do is a budgeted operation. We have banks that we answer to. We have investors that we answer to. This is not one of those let's see how much money we can throw at it Napa Valley stories. This is, you know, this is a business, and we are, you know, we have plans to grow the brand and grow everything that we do so that it's, you know, financially something we can hold on to for a long time and, you know, grow a team of employees that are dedicated to it.
Gee, and that goes back to that whole idea that wine is easy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like anything, you know. There is banks who are responsible. That just alone is scary.
Right.
But for people to know that yes, it's a business like any other business, the number one goal has to be to make a profit.
Exactly. Right. That is exactly true. And, you know, having investors, we have investors because wine is a very expensive product to make because you have to hold your inventory. Generally, if you're talking about red wine from the Napa Valley, focus on Merlot or Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, you have to produce that product and hold it for 2 years. It's aging in barrel, and it's usually at a minimum 2 years. Now, there's many, you know, that would do it in 18 months, some 12 months, but we're talking about wine that, you know, would start at $40+ a bottle and go to whatever number that is, 500. Not for us, but for others that are out there. That's, you got to carry that inventory. That costs a lot of money. And as you look to grow production, and there's that tipping point, you ask any, you know, banker that focuses on the wine industry or financial advisor, they'll tell you right at that point where you're trying to grow production and your sales, meaning your accounts receivable, are not going to match each other. And so you better have a source, because otherwise you just better plan to stick at a nice, simple level. And a lot of people do that because they do it more as a, you know, a secondary, you know, part of their lives. This is my life and soul. This is for, you know, Michael and all he's doing in my family as well. So everything we do, we try and do as focused as we can.
And well, that makes sense. And obviously, you have a great winemaker with Aaron Pott,
yes,
who many of our listeners have are aware of,
right?
Which is not a bad deal.
No.
And let's talk specifically about the wine. Your focus is in the French tradition of Merlot.
Right. So Aaron Pott is our winemaker. He's actually an equity partner in the company.
Nice.
Very important, right? We believe in him. It goes back to what we're talking about. He believes in us, and we want to keep him close. So that's one way to do it, obviously. He came to us, Sarah Gott, who made Joseph Phelps Vineyards for many years, made Quintessa, was our original winemaker for the first four vintages. As her life got a little more complicated with all the different projects that she and her husband had going, and as we were becoming more complicated with vineyards and, you know, more case production, she said, you know, I need assistance or I need someone else to take the lead, and here's the guy that I'd recommend. And I looked at his resume, and I only looked at one resume for that winemaker search, and that was Aaron Pott. I looked at his resume, and I literally was staring at the page just going, you've got to be kidding me. This is absolutely perfect. And what I was looking at was a resume that showed that he had made wine in Bordeaux in the villages on the right bank, not the left bank, but the right bank, Merlot and Cabernet Franc territory. And he worked as winemaker for Latour Figeac and Tropelong Mondo, which are very respected houses over there. And the reason why that made so much sense is because those are Merlot and Cabernet Franc houses. Blackbird, which translates, the reason why the brand is named Blackbird is because Merlot translates as little blackbird in French patois.
I had no idea.
So that's where that comes from. That's why it's named Blackbird, because Merlot is one of our primary varietals. Cabernet Franc is as important to us. So if you looked at our gallonage in the winery, Merlot and Cabernet Franc are basically equal. Cabernet Sauvignon is going to be in the winery for us, but it's going to be tertiary. And the reason why that's different is because, without exaggeration, if you ask most premium Napa Valley vintners, meaning someone that's producing wines that sell anywhere from 50 and above, to bring one of their best, quote-unquote, red wines to a dinner party, the chance of them bringing Cabernet Sauvignon is extremely high. I would say above 75%. So we looked at it and took a contrarian approach and wanted to focus on the right bank, Merlot, Cabernet Franc. And Aaron making those wines, it was a perfect fit. The amazing thing about Aaron, he is an absolute character, as many winemakers are. He's an extremely intelligent individual. And he has not only a degree in winemaking, but he has a master's degree in viticulture, or grape growing is what that translates as. And why that's important to us and to me is because the old adage of you make the wine in the vineyard, right? If you don't start with good grapes, just like if you don't start with good proteins in the kitchen, you're not going to make a great dish. And so having a master's degree in viticulture truly allows him to go toe-to-toe from a, you know, a management perspective with all of our grower partners. And he can have a strong influence, and he's very well respected. Not a heavy-handed influence, that's not what I mean, but just an ability to really make it a partnership. And I'll never forget early on when we were negotiating an agreement to buy grapes from a particular vintner, and they sent us the standard contract with all the provisions, you know, you will buy this much, you will pay us this, et cetera. And Aaron said, well, yes, of course, but I want to make sure you understand our viticulture contract. And it's not something you need to sign. You know, it's not what it is. It's a handshake deal. But I want you to understand how we should grow these grapes. And this is how we think about it. And it's not going to be more economically beneficial to us or to you. It's about the longevity of the relationship, and it's about making sure the vineyard is balanced. So it's not just about let's get a better crop that year. Let's just make sure the vineyard is in balance so that it has more longevity in future vintages, future harvests. And the people that, you know, don't really agree to that, you know that you're not working with the right person, right? And once again, it's not about them signing it. It's just about a handshake in the vineyard. Do you understand why we want to do this? And that's great. So he's an amazing asset to our team. And because in wine, you have to stand for something, I believe. One of the problems, I think, with many wineries in the United States and California is they try and be all things to all people. They make Chardonnay and Cabernet to start. Then they start to make Pinot Noir. Then they're starting to make Zin. Right. Oh, look, we make Syrah. Why? What do you stand for? So we only make Merlot, Cabernet, Franc-focused wines.
Focus.
Right?
Right.
Focus. And that allows us to have a much clearer relationship with Aaron in what he should be doing. It's not like, hey, Aaron, please go make Pinot Noir. Please go make, Zinfandel. There's a few little projects that we do under a separate brand called Masonry, which is pretty much only sold at our location in the Napa Valley.
Which ironically is called?
Masonry, Napa Valley. Exactly. But otherwise, it's just keeping a clear focus on five wines. One dry rosé, which is Arve East. One Arise red wine. It's called Arise, which I'll tell you about later. And then three what we term principal wines, very low production, Merlot, Cabernet, Franc-based wines. And the reason why there's three is because they're different blend interpretations. One's Illustration, predominantly Merlot. One is Paramore, which is Cabernet Franc Merlot. And one is Contrarian. And that's called Contrarian because there's always a little bit more Cabernet Sauvignon in that wine. Generally not the majority, but it might be the secondary varietal instead of the tertiary varietal in the wine. And so we have a little fun for those individuals that just have to have a little bit more left bank in their wine.
Well, your rosé, from what I can see, it's a blend of a few different varietals, and that strikes me as being, again, more of a French design.
Exactly. So it's a true Saunier, which translates as to bleed. And so what we do is we bleed the juice off prior to fermentation of different red wine lots. So Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon. And that actually serves two purposes. Excuse me. It actually gives us a rosé, and then it concentrates the red wines because you're taking away a lot of liquid, and you're able to create a more dense tank scenario for when you're about to ferment. And that, so it's mutually beneficial to both the rosé and the other red wines. It's a dry rosé. It's pink. And as I like to say, when I take it around the country, and let's say we're doing a dinner somewhere, I can see certain people when they see the bottle or it's being poured in their glass, they will literally start to cringe and cinch up a little bit. I'm like, okay, everybody take it easy. It's a dry rosé. It's more of a Provençal style, if you will, in that it's got some great minerality to it. If you can get that out of California, and we try our best, it's got almost some salinity to it, and it's not sweet. And as I say to people jokingly, but half seriously, if you don't drink the rosé, you don't get any red wine tonight. And literally they'll start to drink it and everybody will be happy.
It's a fair deal. I would suggest strongly that they try it.
Exactly. And once again, not a lot of great rosés produced in California or the U.S. of any quantity. We think there's a huge opportunity there, especially with that next generation of, Generation X, Generation Y, where people don't know as much about the sweet rosés that occurred in the United States, in California and whatever that was, the 70s, 80s. Range. Right. I'm not going to name any names, but they did an amazing job, in producing a wine that people really enjoyed. But there's also a preconceived notion on those wines from the baby boomer generation. And you can literally see specifically the male demographic, and they'll literally go, oh, no. But everybody else is open to it.
A great example of that is this is how many years later people still talk about Prohibition in a way that it wasn't all that long ago.
Right.
People do remember the sweeter wines, and it does have that reputation.
Yep.
But like anything else, people need to open their minds up or at least give something a try.
Wine is about a journey.
That's exactly what it is. Now, I found a number of winemakers and winemakers themselves I've talked to that have been experimenting with Mont Rosé, again, in the French design.
Right.
And that carries a lot of credibility with it because, they, even if they're doing it just for themselves, are waking up more people to say, hey, this is,
exactly.
Especially here in Milwaukee today as an example. I think it's about 90 degrees
right.
Outside. It is. I love Cabernet and I love Merlot.
Right.
It's perfect for a day like that.
Well, and if you think about it, because our rosé is Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon. So you get some of the essence of those varietals, but it's in a much lighter style so that when you're sitting, you know, beside Lake Michigan or when you're sitting on a roof deck somewhere, it's quaffable. And it's not, as we say on the back of the bottle, it's not a wine to demystify. It's a wine to enjoy, meaning just drink it. Just let it open up your palate, and then you can move on, you know, to something else after that.
No pressure.
Or not. Stick with it.
Yeah,
order multiple bottles.
It's a no-pressure wine. Hey, there's a wine label right there. You can't have that name. But how many cases are you making of that of the rosé?
Of the rosé? Less than 1,000.
Okay.
Yep.
And is that distributed at all? Or is it that strictly?
Is.
Oh, it is.
Okay. It is in not every market. It's available in Milwaukee. You know, we do have it in Wisconsin. Very limited quantities. You're not going to see it stacked on any shelf.
What does it sell for?
$25.
Okay, so that's a very fair price for this kind of a rosé.
It is, but that's at the high end of kind of the price point. You know, most rosés, when people think about it, you know, they're in that teen range. But there's also rosés in this country that sell for $75, you know, $50, and they're amazing wines. So many people think about it as a summer wine. But honestly, it's a year-round wine. And, you know, there's villages in France where that's all they produce. That's what they focus on. Rosé is actually an amazing wine to pair, as I like to say, with the Thanksgiving dinner table. Because there is such a hodgepodge of food out there. Rosé, the right style rosé, has enough density and weight. It's, as long as it's not water or syrup, as long as it's in the middle there somewhere, it can handle a lot of different types of food.
So your tasting room is a bit unique in that it's a combination of art and I believe design. Masonry is in Yountville, and it's a great old stone building, if I remember correctly. I've been in there a number of times, and I think you share the space with a couple other wineries, am I not?
Right. So Masonry Napa Valley opened in the fall of 2008. It is a nationally registered historic building, and it's historic because of the river stone, which comprises, you know, the structure. We took about a year to restore it. Absolutely stunning old building just at the north end of Yountville, right up the road from the French Laundry restaurant. And yes, it is an art, wine, and design gallery. And the whole idea there is really simple. Every product at the hands of an artist, meaning the winemaker, the painter, the sculptor, the designer. And if you think about it, so that's, you know, kind of who produces the products. Think about the customer, the person that might be an aficionado or collector of wine has a high likelihood they could appreciate art or design. So we try to open up a few different mediums, you know, with art, wine, and design. We do a lot of tastings both inside the stone building, the gallery, as well as an outdoor sculpture garden, which, as you know, in California, you can be outside 330 days a year. I like to say, and it's true, I can wear shorts any day of the year in California, literally. And I will not be endangering my health, shall we say.
I'm going to note that today I'm wearing shorts and he's not.
Exactly. Point well taken. You know, it's so beautiful. People want to be outside in our sculpture garden out back. You get people to come in January and it's a 60-degree day and they don't understand how could this be this way. So we have a fire pit where people can go sit outside. We're open into the evenings so people can actually go to the fire pit, grab a blanket, enjoy some wine. As you were stating, though, it is a collective. So we have 18 winery partners, including the wines that we produce. And so we serve as the living room and tasting room for these different wineries. And generally, the way we think about our partners in terms of who comes in there, they have to be smaller, generally more family operations or, you know, individuals that are running it. They generally don't have a place that you can go unless you are in their home. Or they're what I call geographically challenged, meaning they're way the heck out there, up in the mountains, through the woods, and, you know, it's a pain for people to get out to them. So we serve as, you know, their living rooms. And I say that very purposefully because we try and make it quite intimate, you know, and personal. Lael Vineyards is one of our partners. Rob and Lael, an amazing matriarch in the Napa Valley. And we want to serve, you know, as a place that welcomes her guests and hopefully have the same level of hospitality that we know she provides her guests. But, you know, for an individual like that to set up a tasting up at their own location, inevitably they're going to be 30 to 45 minutes late, meaning the customer. They're going to be there for an hour. And with all due respect, remember one thing, we're running a business. If the sale doesn't come through at a level that is, you know, gives you a good return, you've just spent 4 or 5 hours of your day on what? So, you know, we serve as their location. And it's an amazing spot because we're able to forge relationships with all of these different vintners. Our team of employees is able to be constantly nurtured by all these, you know, different ways that people market and brand and make their wines.
It's an inspiring space. And if I remember correctly, as an advantage to the visitor, that you're not by appointment? People can walk in?
They can walk in. We do always request that people let us know that they're coming in, because remember what we were talking about earlier, hospitality. One of the mandates that I offer our team is this. If you can literally say to the customer that walks through our threshold, welcome back versus welcome to, we've achieved our goal. If you know who's walking through the door because of, you know, the information that we've been able to gather on them and create rapport with them more quickly, ask them how things are back in New York, talk about whatever that you know they have an affinity for, and check in on the wines they purchase versus first time in, thank you so much for joining us. Would you like to hear about what we offer or just browse first? There is such value in literally the simplicity of understanding welcome back versus welcome to.
This is the end of part two of our interview with Paul Leary of Blackbird Vineyards. Download part three from lifebetweenthevines.com or iTunes.